Welcome to this election year special broadcast on the Michigan Public Radio Network. I'm Rick Pluta, Lansing Bureau Chief for Michigan Public Radio. We are going to spend the next hour talking to Mark Schauer about issues that matter to Michigan voters. And we know that because the questions, they're coming from you. From jobs to taxes, the Great Lakes to restoring our cities, this is your chance to question the Democratic nominee for governor. Let's start with education. Have you seen changes in your school district? Worried about how you're going to pay for college? We want your questions about schools, universities, education. The phone number to join us, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. You can also message us on Facebook. We are at Michigan Calling, or tweet us. Use the hashtag MICalling. And a quick note before we go right to your questions, an invitation has also been extended to Governor Snyder, the Republican candidate, to do a similar call-in. Also, we should point out there have been no preconditions set for this hour, no negotiations about topics, format, or follow-up questions. Mark Schauer simply agreed to show up. And on that note, Mark Schauer, former congressman, former state Senate Democratic leader, welcome.
Thank you, Rick. It's great to be here.
Okay, so now to our first question. And as we said, we're beginning the hour with education. A question from Jill in West Bloomfield.
Good morning, Congressman Schauer.
Good morning, Jill.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Good. Under Rick Snyder's governance, Michigan's educational system has suffered to the point that it is in tatters. What will you do to restore credibility and quality to our educational system? Thank you.
Well, I think the people of Michigan have learned who I am and where I come from. My dad was a high school science teacher. My grandmother was a first grade teacher. I'm a proud product of public education. I used to run Head Start. So to me, public education will be my number one priority and will be my number one budget priority. It's one of the reasons why I chose Lisa Brown to be my running mate. She was the Democratic vice chair of the House Education Committee and led the charge against Rick Snyder's billion-dollar cuts to our schools. So we have to start by being clear about our priorities. I mean, Rick Snyder 4 years ago ran as one tough nerd and got tough on all the wrong people, including our kids and our schools and teachers and taxing retiree pensions. And then this was all to give a $1.8 billion corporate tax giveaway, even when companies outsource jobs. His number one priority was corporate tax giveaway. My number one priority is educating our kids, educating our people, making sure that our young people and adults going back to college can afford to go to college. So what we have to do, and it's interesting, you're from West Bloomfield. You're probably a neighbor of Lisa Brown. Lisa has talked personally about, as a mom, about the different educational experience that her children have had. Her younger children are receiving a much different education. They're going to school in larger class sizes. There are basic programs that just don't exist anymore. Teachers have less resources. I mean, I've seen it myself. I spend a fair amount of time in the classroom. I was shadowing a ninth grader at Armada High School in Macomb County, and I heard from students and teachers themselves that they don't have enough textbooks, that some of the technology in the classrooms are nearly as old as the students there. It's impacting the quality of education. So we have to start by putting the $1 billion that Rick Snyder cut from our public schools and put dollars into the classrooms.
Let's talk for a moment about that number. You say it's a $1 billion cut, but almost every analysis says that when you take into account the contributions into the pension system, that it is in fact a net increase in education, and the governor says you have math issues that in fact that has freed up more money for schools. So defend that claim that it's a cut, because almost every analysis says that when you simply add up the dollars, it is not.
Well, the fact of the matter is Rick Snyder's first budget where he gave a $1.8 billion corporate tax break, cut higher education by 15%, raised taxes on retiree pensions, on parents raising kids and low-wage earners, cut $1 billion from the school aid fund.
Defend the school cut number.
Let me be specific about the cut to the classroom. It's about $470 per pupil. So Rick Snyder's correct. He has met his legal mandate to fully fund MPSRS, which is the pension fund for retired teachers. My dad is one of them. That's a requirement by law. But the fact of the matter, and you don't have to take my word for it. I mean, talk to teachers, talk to parents, talk to superintendents, school board members, principals. They have less in the classroom. Let's fast forward to the most.
They say that the increase in funding hasn't kept pace with their needs, nevertheless.
Not only that, Rick, that the most recent school aid fund budget that was signed, passed by the legislature and signed a couple of weeks ago by the governor, I mean, most schools got a $50 per pupil increase.
Those schools in the middle.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was most schools. And, you know, principals were holding press conferences all around the state talking about how this is a net cut after inflation. They have less dollars in the classroom than they did last school year. So that's why we're seeing more teachers pink-slipped. I mean, the reality is, Rick, that teachers are making less than they were 5 and 10 years ago. They're paying more for health care. They're paying more for pensions. So what I'm looking at, and this is a fact, that schools have less money in the classroom, substantially less money per pupil in the classroom when Rick Snyder became governor. So what do you do? We have to refund the money that was cut to the classroom.
Where do you find that money?
I've talked a lot.
Where do you find the money for that refund?
Part of it is, and I the Detroit Free Press did an 8-day series. It's kind of interesting. Even now, the Republicans are figuring out they've got a problem here. Is all of the money that's going to for-profit charter schools? 80% of charter schools in Michigan are run by for-profit management companies, and we saw all of the profits that are made to shareholders.
We're going to get to charters. I'd just like to get to how you're going to refund $1 billion, because that's your number that you're using.
Yes, and I would invite all of our listeners, Rick, to go to markshauer.com. It's S-C-H-A-U-E-R. We released, Lisa Brown and I, a very detailed education plan. In that plan, we talk about how we're going to do this. One of the ways is start using the school aid fund for what it was intended, and talk to people like Lynn Jondal from East Lansing, former rep who was there when Proposal 1 was passed, or Proposal A was passed. The school aid fund now is used for community colleges
and universities,
for higher education. The school aid fund is for pre-K through high school completion. So that's a way that we start to, now, believe me, community colleges and higher education are a priority because especially universities have been cut. But we have to use the school aid fund for what it was intended for. We have to stop the leaks in the bucket, so to speak. And by that, I mean all of the money going to for-profit charter schools, dollars that should be going into the classroom. It's hurting our kids. We know that charter schools spend $2,000 less per pupil in the classroom than traditional public schools. Our neighborhood schools are being hurt. I want to be clear here, Rick, for all of your listeners in this caller. Public education will be my number one priority. It will be my number one budget priority.
Well, let's go to a question about charter schools now. And we've got, I hope you're saying your name right, Mylon from Canton?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Good morning, Mark. Hey, thank you. Mark, you were going into it, and I just wanted to ask you, so you're going back to that Free Press series. What do you think? Are we doing enough to hold the charter schools accountable?
No, we're not. Look, 20 years ago, John Engler was governor, and it was clear there was an agenda to create these, really many of these were converted private schools. Remember, the DeVosses tried to allow tax dollars to be used for our tax dollars to be used for private schools. The voters rejected that. This was really a backdoor attempt to do that. So we've seen this incredible growth in charter schools over the last 20 years. But in the last 3.5 years, since Rick Snyder signed this law lifting the cap on the number of charter schools, they didn't include the necessary oversight and accountability measures. So I find it interesting and actually hopeful that the Senate Majority Leader, Randy Richardville, is now calling for additional oversight and accountability measures. I mean, look, the data is clear. 38% of charter schools perform in the bottom quartile, the bottom 25%. 23% of traditional public schools are performing in the bottom quartile. They're not performing as well as our traditional public schools. But as the Free Press series reported, you know, there are sweetheart lease deals, there's double dipping, there are conflicts of interest between family members and the charter school companies. Charter school boards have really, the school boards have no accountability, no involvement, no access to basic information that our elected school board members have. So we need a number of serious reforms. And bottom line, we have to take the profit motive out. Rick, in Milan, charter schools, you know, most of them, not coincidentally, are K through 6 or K through 8. They're not providing high school programs that typically are much more expensive. They're not providing transportation in most cases. They're paying teachers less. $2,000 less per pupil is going into the classroom. $800 more per pupil is going to overhead. They're spending money on slick advertising. Rick, this reinforces the point. As the Detroit Free Press was running their indictment of for-profit charter schools, National Heritage Academies was spending $300,000 on ads, on banner ads in the Free Press. We need dollars to go to the classroom.
Okay. In a word, just yes or no, do we need to revisit Proposal A in school funding?
We do, yes.
Yes or no? Okay, great. All right. Thank you, Congressman. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, your questions about the economy for the Democratic candidate for governor. You're listening to Michigan Calling, an hour with Mark Schauer here on the Michigan Public Radio Network. Welcome back. I'm Rick Pluta here with Democratic candidate for governor Mark Schauer, and we are taking your questions now on jobs and the economy. What's going on with industries and employment in your community? Are you worried about taxes? The number is 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. You can also ask a question on Facebook. Find us at Michigan Calling, or tweet us, use the hashtag MICalling. And now to our first question on jobs and the economy.
My name is Ruth Baker. I am from Mount Pleasant, Michigan. And my question is, what do you propose to do to bring jobs to Michigan?
Thank you, Ruth. The first thing is we have to invest in education. I mean, the states that are winning economically have the best trained workforces. And so we need to make sure that everyone graduating from high school has the basic tools, whether to go to a four-year university, go to a skilled trades program or an apprenticeship and training program. So, you know, having the best workers to compete globally is the key. Two, we've got to have healthy communities. I mean, we see deep cuts to revenue sharing means that our communities are less attractive for businesses to come, less attractive for our talented people and our young people to stay in Michigan or come to Michigan. We've got to, one, stop giving tax breaks to businesses that outsource their jobs. That's Rick Snyder's policy currently. I believe in giving tax breaks, tax incentives to companies that actually create jobs here. I've done that through my entire career, whether it's a company like Kellogg in Battle Creek or a brake company in Homer that brought manufacturing jobs to Homer, Michigan, rather than Mexico through targeted tax incentives. We need to restore and expand things like the film industry tax credits in Michigan. We need to support entrepreneurs. You know, when I look at Rick Snyder's Michigan Economic Development Corporation, Michigan Strategic Fund, there have been reports of many examples of waste, companies that aren't creating the jobs over state. The state auditor general reported that they've overstated job claims. So we need to focus on investments that actually create jobs. One, our university,
that,
our universities
specifically get to the questions that a lot of people across the political spectrum, conservatives and progressives, have about what's commonly called corporate welfare and those targeted tax breaks. Would you go back to the days of giving away millions and billions of dollars from the state budget in the name of luring jobs?
I mean, I think we can't give tax breaks, as Rick Snyder does, to companies even when they send jobs overseas. We have to be very targeted and strategic. Look, I was in Congress when we helped rescue the auto industry. That was a very important accomplishment, and there were a number of grants and loans to help the auto industry. You know, I'm going to support the auto industry. I'm going to support manufacturing. If there are some targeted tax incentives, some loans, you know, we need to be tactical and strategic about them. I mentioned the film industry that really has been significantly downsized and almost decimated by Rick Snyder. He has a very different view. It's his corporate tax restructuring amounted to a $1.8 billion corporate tax giveaway. It wasn't tied to job creation. I mean, Rick, we have one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. And CNN Money just reported that Michigan has one of the five worst economies. So our universities are huge drivers. We've got to invest in high-tech research and support companies that create jobs here in Michigan. And I'm going to support, as governor, as a steward of our tax dollars, buy strong, buy Michigan provisions. Like this contract with this, you know, this Montreal-based company, a $90 million contract. They were the company that created the national health exchange website, which was an abysmal failure. And Rick Snyder thought it was a good idea to send $90 million of our dollars to a Montreal-based company. We have IT providers here, Rick. I meet them every day that can do that job, and we should be spending our tax dollars with Michigan companies.
Well, give us a peek. You know, take 90 seconds and give us a peek into your first 100 days. What we're wondering is, what can a governor do, a governor on his or her own do to actually, you know, quote, fix, unquote, the state's economy? So give us the rundown. Your
first 90 days, we put the $1 billion back in our schools that were cut by Rick Snyder. We reversed.
You can do that on your own?
Well, it's going to take some help from the legislature, of course. And I think this is going to be a change election, and I expect, and believe me, my experience working in a bipartisan way in the legislature will be very significant and very handy. We've seen a CEO governor who's not been very good or comfortable working with the legislature. So these are going to be bipartisan solutions, Rick. But we're going to repeal the Snyder job-killing retirement tax, roll back some of the tax increases on middle-class families. I mean, let's keep in mind, you know, our current governor's economic strategy was trickle-down economics. That's exactly what it was. And to pay for it, he cut $1 billion from our schools, raised taxes on retiree pensions, did away with a child tax credit that helped working families, tried to eliminate the earned income tax credit on the working poor, did away, you know, raised taxes and, you know, did away with a tax credit for public radio and food banks and community foundations, all tax increases on the middle class. So, you know, number two is we repeal the retirement tax and roll back some of these middle class tax increases.
Let's talk about the pension tax for a moment. So you would restore the income tax exemption on pension income.
Yes, yes.
Would you also extend that to 401ks and other types of retirement income, which are actually the retirement income that most people have now?
I would not tax retirement income in Michigan. I disagree with Rick Snyder, where he I'm astonished when he rolled out his aging agenda a month ago or so, and when pressed by the media, said that not taxing retirement income was unfair.
So you would expand the tax breaks for retirement income to every form of retirement income?
I would not tax retirement income, Rick, because we are losing retirees who and their spending impact in Michigan to other states. I talk to them all the time that have moved to Arizona, moved to Florida, hardworking people that built their careers, raised their families here because of Rick Snyder's punitive retirement tax.
How do you pay for that?
Well, I think we've got to look at this from a dynamic standpoint, and that is one of the reasons why we have one of the worst unemployment rates here in Michigan. We're projected to be 49th out of 50 in job growth over the next 10 years is because, you know, not only does trickle-down economics not work, but taking money out of the pockets of people that are living month to month, paycheck to paycheck, you know, that's money that's been sucked out of the economy. So you,
but you have served in Congress, you have served in the legislature, that you understand that when you take money out of the budget to do something, that you've got to replace it, and you've got to do it up front. You've got to have a balanced budget. How do you that may be a great long-term or even medium-term economic strategy.
There will be,
how do you pay for it up front?
I mean, what we have to keep in mind, Rick, is in our economic growth here is significantly behind the nation's economic growth. Fortunately, the nation's economy is starting to pick up steam. The nation has replaced all of the jobs lost in the Great Recession. Michigan is one of the few states that haven't. So there'll be an immediate impact when we start to actually practice a form of economics that works, rebuilding the middle class, making sure people have money in their pockets that they can spend in the economy. That generates sales tax revenue, that generates other kind of revenue for the state. But, you know, but I'm going to audit.
So expanding. Finish your point.
We're going to audit every department of state government, and we're finding examples where this governor's leadership is not so good and wasteful in terms of tens of millions of dollars, for example, that we're probably going to have to pay back the federal government because they've allowed the Department of Community Health, Medicaid-paid workers who have been felons. Caring for disabled Michiganders. You know, there are example after example of wasted tax dollars, ineffective leadership. I'm going to audit every department of state government. We're going to root out waste, Rick, and I'm going to be clear. I'm clear about my priorities. We're going to put that money toward our priorities. We're going to put that money toward our schools, toward our universities, toward our communities, and to fix our roads.
And I've been covering the Capitol for 30 years, and governors come in and they cover those audits and they order those audits and they never turn up. It's not that it's a bad idea. They never turn up the kinds of savings, though, to talk about the kind of upfront budget expenditure that you're talking about. If you expand tax breaks for all types of retirement income, just to name one. Yep. Where do you come up with the upfront money?
Well, the other thing, Rick, is I'm going to stop giving tax breaks to companies that outsource their jobs. I mean, there is significant waste. There are not only programs that aren't working. I mean, let's look at another example. You know, Rick Snyder's contract with Aramark Food Service in our prisons. I mean, it has been an abysmal failure. It's going to end up costing the state millions and millions of dollars. It's making our prisons less safe. You know, that's another example. I mentioned the Montreal-based company. I mean, I mentioned Department of Community Health. So these will be significant in terms of the total savings. And you know, I think we've got to make sure we get our priorities straight. That starts to build an economy that is working for everyone, not just for the wealthy. And that's what's happening with Rick Snyder's economy.
Okay, we have a question from Kim on Facebook, and Kim says, I've been unemployed for about a year, and I'm an older, educated worker. What programs will you have for me and others like me?
Right. Well, one of the things, and I've worked in my career prior to even running in the legislature, I ran a large four-county nonprofit community development agency. I had 200 employees, a $4 million budget. We were responsible for some job training programs and specifically services for the aging. I think we have to tie our job training initiatives. We've got to value, for example, union apprenticeship and training initiatives that are not paid for by taxpayer dollars to where we have industry need. We know we have a need for skilled workers in advanced manufacturing, and so I think we've got to work with seniors who have incredible experience find opportunities within their community, work with our community colleges, and support job training initiatives that are going to help put you to work.
On that topic, let's go to a question from Gail, who's in Ovid. Gail, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Gail, your question for Mark Schauer, please.
Good morning.
Yes, thank you. Governor Snyder hasn't done anything on clean energy, yet after he took office a few years ago, the utilities all said in a public hearing held by the Senate Energy Committee that they were creating jobs, saving ratepayers' money, and creating clean energy through the clean energy legislation that was passed on a bipartisan basis.
Right.
What will your clean energy policy be?
Great. No, I appreciate the question. And when we talk about growing the economy and in a way that puts people to work, in this case, protects the environment, but also generates more revenues through income tax and sales tax to the state of Michigan so we can support our schools and rebuild our roads. Clean energy is a very important priority of mine. I mean, first of all, Michigan is a Great Lakes state. I'll be the Great Lakes governor. Besides our people, our Great Lakes and our natural resources are our Michigan's most precious resources and most valuable assets. I was in the legislature. I was Democratic leader of the state Senate when we wrote PA 295, which created the 10% by 2015 renewable energy standard and the 1% energy efficiency standard. It's worked. It's created thousands of jobs, construction jobs and manufacturing jobs. But, you know, Michigan, as the Great Lakes state, should lead. We should lead when it comes to addressing climate change. We should lead in renewable energy and energy efficiency. So I'll be rolling out a very specific standard. It's amazing to me that, Rick Snyder seems intent on just allowing the current law to sunset. The 10% energy efficiency standard will be hit by 2015. There's nothing to take its place. His own Michigan Public Service Commission says that we can get to 30% of electricity generation from renewable energy sources by 2035. I think that's a realistic and attainable goal, the one that we should strive for. We should double our energy efficiency standard here in Michigan. The important thing is that we create this certainty. But certainty for creating the workforce that we need, certainty in creating manufacturing jobs. So I can't think of a better example, sort of win-win example, where we protect our pure Michigan and we put tens of thousands of people to work. We diversify our economy and we lead. Michigan should not follow. We are following. We are way behind in the pack. We're losing manufacturing jobs that we should be gaining here in Michigan.
All right, let's go to another question now.
My name is Cannon Thomas, student at University of Michigan from Detroit, Michigan. My question would be, as a candidate for governor, what would you do that is different from what has been done in the past that will revitalize Detroit? And where's the importance in revitalizing Detroit? What's the value in it?
Well, we need a policy for our cities. And what is happening in Detroit is, on the one hand, there are encouraging signs, some examples of collaboration with the public private sector, the philanthropic sector stepping up business investment, but bankruptcy where public employee pensions are going to be cut, Rick Snyder violating our Constitution. Again, it's a sort of an example of the wrong kinds of economics of actually taking money out of the pockets of pensioners.
Should pensioners take that deal or should or should they go to court
they should never have this question posed to them
but
in the first place.
But the question is posed to
they've
them.
Got to make that decision, Rick. I'm not going to wade into whether they should. And today, by the way, is the last day for pensioners and other creditors to cast their ballots. They've got to make that decision. But Rick Snyder has put them in this position. Article 9, Section 24 of Michigan's Constitution says that pensions of public pensioners, public retirees, shall not be diminished or impaired. It couldn't be clearer. This governor, it's
should,
not only failed.
Should he take that question to court?
I think he should. I think he should. And, you know, Rick Snyder should be held accountable by the electorate for violating the Constitution, you know, not just violating the Constitution in a way that's going to hurt thousands of pensioners in the city of Detroit. But what Michigan needs is a governor who will lead and will be a partner with the city of Detroit. Look, Mayor Duggan is ready to lead the city of Detroit. The city council is ready to lead the city of Detroit. They need a partner in the governor's office. You know, not only do we need to restore revenue sharing cuts, you know, I was there when a promise was made to the city of Detroit that was broken, that cost the city, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Rick, you were covering the Capitol then. You know, but we need a real job strategy that helps make the city safe in terms of the city having enough resources for police and fire. We've got to tackle blight that's happening aggressively. I think Mayor Duggan's doing a good job. Congressman Dan Kildee is fighting for more money to remove blight. We've got to fix the infrastructure of the city of Detroit. Let me make a point. I commend the council president, city of Detroit, for talking about community benefit agreements. I mean, what we need to do
is community benefit agreements are understandings up front, legally binding understandings up front about what happens in a community in exchange for a particular
business. Arenas are built or roads are built, bridges are built, and let's be clear, there are hundreds of millions of dollars that, you know, federal dollars, state dollars, private sector dollars to rebuild the city of Detroit. Detroit businesses should be performing that work, and Detroiters should be performing that work, and that's true for our other urban communities. And you know, we've got a pipeline.
I want to quickly get back though to the city of Detroit's finances. Do you think those pension costs were manageable?
You know, it's interesting because one of the variables that where there are very wildly different estimates were things like the rates of return on pensions and.
I'm sorry. I have to.
We have to come back.
Off. Yep. But when we come back, more of your questions for Democratic candidate for Governor Mark Schauer. You're listening to Michigan Calling, an hour with Mark Schauer on the Michigan Public Radio Network. Welcome back to Michigan Calling. I'm Rick Pluta, Lansing Bureau Chief for Michigan Public Radio, here with Democratic candidate for Governor Mark Schauer. And we're waiting on your questions. The environment, public safety, LGBT rights, what's on your mind as you get ready to vote? The phone number to join us is 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. You can also message us on Facebook. We're at Michigan Calling, or tweet us. Use the hashtag #MICalling. And Congressman, I want to give you a chance to take a few seconds to wrap up your on pensions.
The pension income for general City of Detroit pensioners is, you know, $18,000 to $20,000 a year. That's not an exorbitant pension for police officers and firefighters. It's a little over $30,000 a year. Those are folks that put their themselves in harm's way. So the pensions are reasonable. What's not reasonable are cuts to those pensions that have been promised to those hardworking people that really, in many cases, are just living month to month as it is. For general retirees in the city of Detroit, they're facing anywhere from a 4.5% pension cut to up to a 20% pension cut by this governor. Again, that violates the Constitution, and that's on top of them having that income subject to the state income tax, the retirement tax. So it's really going to have a negative impact on those people and will hurt Detroit's economy, too.
Okay, and we're going to take a call now from Francis in Grand Rapids. Francis.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to know what the plan is for creating more public transportation throughout the state so that people in smaller cities have a variety of means to travel to where the jobs are.
Right. Michigan lags in access and investments in public transportation. You know, it's amazing. I know you're talking about smaller rural communities, but looking at Metro Detroit in southeast Michigan, it's the largest metropolitan area in the state without a system of public transportation. I'm encouraged by the Regional Transit Authority, the Ann Arbor Transit Authority director is taking that position. He has a very positive track record. But you know, we've got to look at how we grow Michigan's economy. How do we attract investment? How do we attract people? How do we attract our young people that, in too many cases, go to Chicago or New York or LA or Washington? And folks want to be able to get around in different ways. It may be because they're conscious about reducing greenhouse gas emissions. It may be just cost. It may be lack of a vehicle. It may be a handicap or disability. And by the way, I ran senior transportation when I ran the Community Action Agency in Battle Creek. So I think public transit's important throughout the state, including rural communities. It's kind of interesting. I've watched my own county of Calhoun County where there's been a Battle Creek has its own transit. The county does not. There's been a struggle to find a way to bridge that. I think in many cases, communities develop and support countywide or regional transit authorities. Bottom line, it's good for the economy. That's why communities like Grand Rapids have passed a transit millage, and they have a rapid transit, bus rapid transit line in the city.
Well, let's stick with that topic. Francis, thanks a lot for your question. Let's go on to another one.
I'm Peter Friedman Doan from Ann Arbor, and I'd like to know how a new governor will be able to fix the roads given the failure of our present governor.
Well,
and the current governor has not been lacking in calling for money for roads.
He has consistently called for money for roads. He has consistently failed in getting his legislature to do anything or anything of significance. They've redirected some state revenues. And by the way, this last round, most of the, I think it was on the order of 70% of road fixes went to Republican districts. It should not be a partisan political process. But, you know, at crunch time, and I was there in the legislature in 1997-98 as a Democrat who had just won in a Republican seat, had a bullseye on my back. John Engler was governor. We worked together in a bipartisan way. The last time there was a significant fix for our roads, Build Michigan 2. So it's a leadership.
So look at this. How would you do better, especially since, you know, the prospects are pretty good that you'll be dealing with at least one chamber that is going to be Republican.
That is certainly possible. There's a comparison, and I want people to understand I have a very different style than our current CEO governor. He's taken a hands-off approach. Yes, he's stood up in State of the State addresses and so forth, but has a very hard time dealing with a legislature of his own party. At crunch time, three and a half weeks ago when the legislature was trying to hammer something out, it was a state senate. Rick Snyder was in New York. He made two trips to New York. One of those was a fundraising trip with billionaire Michael Bloomberg to raise money for his campaign. If I was governor, and when I become governor, I will be in Lansing, I will be in the legislature, I will be meeting with Democrats and Republicans to develop a plan. I mean, first.
Do you horse trade?
Politics is give and take, so I listen. I understand the interests. I find mutual interests of whether they're Democratic or Republican members of the legislature. We find solutions together. I mean, politics is the art of the possible, which often means there's compromise. I would characterize it, Rick, as give and take. It's a strength of mine. I served most of my 12 years in the legislature, 10 of those years, I was in the minority. And, you know, in the minority, you have to work a little harder. You have to be innovative. You have to work with colleagues on the other side of the aisle. 6 years of my time, John Engler was governor. 6 years, Jennifer Granholm was governor. But what I will do is, first, we're going to get our fair share from the federal government. We're a donor state. I helped bring $900 million additional money to Michigan when I was a member of Congress to fix our roads. I was on the Transportation Committee. I know how to do that. Second, I talked about waste, and there is waste in state government. We're going to audit every department of state government. We're going to put that money toward our priorities. I talked about education, mm-hmm. universities, communities, fixing our roads. And then Third, assuming we still need money, we got to make sure corporations pay their fair share. We're going to take away these tax breaks for corporations
let's
that are outsourced their jobs, put that money to fix our roads.
I think Janet from Traverse City has a question on that point. Janet?
Hi, I'm Janet. I'm from Traverse City.
Hi.
And I work for Disability Determination Services.
Okay.
It's under the auspices of Department of Human Services.
Sure.
And I see quite a bit of waste just in our office alone, paper, electricity, time. What can be done about that, like on an employee's doing something about
Thank
that?
Thank you. And I am going to value our state employees. I mean, this governor has taken an adversarial approach. I mean, you have to start by listening. And Rick, I'm going to challenge you a little bit in terms of the amount of waste that's out here. I've never talked to Janet before. I'm hearing an example within that one department, that program. We have to listen to people. I mean, if Rick Snyder would have been listening, for example, to corrections officers or prison food service workers and listened to their ideas about, you know, cutting middle management. And I've talked to some of these employees, and they give specific examples about bloated middle management in the corrections department. Make sure, you know, that's money that can be saved. You know, this Aramark contract was nothing about, you know, saving money. It was about privatizing and cutting state workers. So if we value state workers, they are on the front lines. They're there because they want to serve. They could be making more money in the private sector. They're working to serve Michiganders, in this case, persons with disabilities. And I thank you for your work, Janet, that if we listen to our people and their ideas for more efficient state government, we will save tens and hundreds of millions of dollars and provide better and provide better service to the people of Michigan.
Would there be fewer managers in state government under a Shower administration?
I believe in lean and efficient state government. So, look, I give you that example from the Department of Corrections. You know, we there's a report that was issued called a New Solutions Report that did assess the number of middle managers in state government. I want, just like I want dollars
to... That was the State Employee Unions report.
A number of state employee unions. But just like, but the point is, you know, we need, just like we need to get dollars to the classroom for teachers to teach and students to learn, we need dollars to get to direct services to Michiganders. And if we can do it more efficiently, if that means less middle managers, then the key is our outcome of better services at the most efficient cost.
Let's go to a question from David on Twitter. What will you do about the 63-year-old Enbridge pipeline under the Straits of Mackinac?
I don't think there's anyone with more experience on the with Enbridge other than people in Marshall and Calhoun County that had spilt oil on their property than me. I live in Calhoun County. As a member of Congress, I lived the pipeline spill of Enbridge Line 6B. A million gallons of Canadian tar sands oil was spilled in the Kalamazoo River. It never should have happened. Enbridge knew they had deficiencies in that pipeline. In fact, the federal government, the regulatory agency, knew there were deficiencies in that pipeline, and it should have been stopped and should have been repaired. They're now replacing that entire pipeline. It's unfortunate that
it's happened. Was there a failure there at the State Department of Environmental Quality?
I wouldn't lay it at the feet of DEQ. I mean, this was a failure by this company and the department, Pipeline Hazardous Material and Safety Administration.
Okay, so you see a problem there. What do you do about that pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac?
This governor has not been using the authority that he has.
What would you do about the pipeline?
Well, what I would do, and I've written specifically about this, Rick, is Line 5 that runs below the Straits of Mackinac is older than Line 6B that ruptured and spilled a million gallons of oil in the Kalamazoo River. I mean, as governor, over my dead body will one drop of oil spill in the Great Lakes. So I have called on Enbridge already, and if I was governor, I would call on Enbridge to replace that pipeline. That's a 61-year-old pipeline. That's significantly older than me, and it's older than the pipeline that burst in the Kalamazoo River. So I know a report was just released on what the impact would be if there was a break in that pipeline.
Your executive power.
I will use
to
my
deny
full
permission.
Executive authority. I will go to the legislature for expanded authority if we need it. I will call on the federal government, the Pipeline Safety and Hazardous Material Administration, PHMSA, part of the U.S. Department of Transportation, to make sure we call on Enbridge to replace that line. And let me make a specific point here, Rick. Congresswoman Candace Miller, who I served with on the Transportation Committee, Republican, found evidence that part of Enbridge's pipeline that ran below Lake St. Clair had a dent. That section of pipeline was removed. We cannot gamble with our Great Lakes. Not only just the economic impact of such a spill, but the environmental impact, the impact on our quality of life. So I will call on Enbridge. I will use every ounce of my authority to make sure Line 5 is replaced.
Let's go to Raul from Lansing. Raul, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. Your question, please.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, my question was, how do you feel about Michigan's Medical Marijuana Act, and how do you feel about Bill Schuette and others attacking the act, changing it, making it so that patients have less access to medical marijuana? How do you feel about that? Yep. What would you do?
I support Michigan's Medical Marijuana Act. The voters were clear in terms of what they wanted. I've learned a lot more about how the law is working. There have been some problems. I think many of those problems have been fixed. I've met with and visited some distribution or some dispensaries that are doing a fantastic job. I've talked to individuals that, were taking prescription drugs that, opiates and others that were not effective for them, and medical marijuana has been effective. They've been able to work. They have a quality of life. They're pain-free. They've gotten off of these other meds, prescription drugs, some of which are highly addictive. So I think the medical marijuana law is working. There are a couple of bills pending in the state Senate. I think there's actually a hearing next week on one or two of those bills that would provide additional patient protections and safeguards. I support that legislation.
You can't do anything about the federal law, obviously, but is it time to decriminalize or legalize marijuana at the state level?
Well, there's a grand experiment on legalization now in the states of Colorado and Washington, and I would not want to lead on that issue. I think we have to see how that works out in those states. But, a number of communities are decriminalizing. That's not marijuana. That's not legalization. That's turning it into equivalent to a traffic offense or a parking ticket. I'm open to looking at decriminalization. We need to do a little more research before we go there, but I'm open to it.
We have another question, but just yes or no. War on drugs, success or failure?
It's not been a success.
Okay, next question.
Hi, my name is Erica Edwards, and I'm from Detroit, Michigan, but I live in Lansing, Michigan. And my question is, what are they going to do about the gun violence that is proclaiming our streets here in Lansing, Michigan?
And other urban areas as well. I mean, the Detroit, Flint, Saginaw.
It's a national problem. I mean, I've been following what's going on in Chicago. It's just horrific. We're losing young people. I know the police chief in Inkster just resigned in part because of the tragic, senseless drive-by killing of a two-year-old. I believe that, I support the Second Amendment, believe that law-abiding citizens should be able to own and carry handguns. I actually voted for concealed carry reform when I was in the state house, but we've got to make sure that we get guns out of the hands of criminals, and we have to make sure there are adequate background checks for people that should never be owning or possessing handguns in the first place. So I think.
How about limits on how much ammo can go into a gun magazine?
I mean, I think there are some limits. I think it's always a question of what that limit ought to be.
Okay. Tell us one thing.
Can I say one other thing about this
quickly,
issue?
Yes.
You know, we've got to provide a pipeline to opportunity for young people. I mean, too often crime is, at least in their minds, the only opportunity. That's why education is so important. That's why things like community benefit agreements are so important, where as we rebuild our cities, you know, our young people have access, that they have a pipeline to apprenticeship and training programs that provide incredible career opportunities for them. So we need real pathways to opportunity and jobs in our communities.
Governor, just tell us in a minute, 60 seconds, how will Michigan be different? How will state government be different in a way that people will notice at the end of the first 90 days of a shower administration?
Yeah. Well, we're going to start investing in our people, valuing our people, our workers, all of our people. I mean, we will, if this governor doesn't do it before I become governor, we'll stop discriminating against people, meaning we'll amend the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to not only ban discrimination based on sexual orientation, but also gender identity. We'll value our people. We'll educate our people. We'll invest in our communities. You know, our priorities are our people, our cities and our communities, our infrastructure, our natural resources. We talked about renewable energy.
Infrastructure investment in 90 days?
I think we can. Yes, absolutely, Rick. Okay. No reason we cannot do that.
You cannot. What sort of infrastructure?
And I'm going to start working on it after starting November 5th. I am very clear about we'll bring legislators together even prior to when I get sworn in on January 1, 2015 to work on fixing our roads.
Okay. Congressman, we're going to have to leave it there. Our thanks for your time this hour.
I would love, if Rick Snyder doesn't take his slot, I'd be happy to come back and take that slot too.
And to everyone who phoned, tweeted, Facebook, thank you for your questions. Again, an invitation to come and answer your questions has also been extended to Governor Snyder. Michigan Calling was produced by Zoe Clark, Joe Lindstroth, Jake Neer, and Laura Weber. Aaron Young engineered the program. Jason Thompson directed the video stream. Thank you to WKAR for hosting the program. I am Rick Kluta. This has been a special broadcast on the Michigan Public Radio Network.